From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made in the country of Wales, where citizens and the Welsh government are debating legislation that would ban corporal punishment for children, usually called spanking. If the measure is approved, Wales would join more than 50 countries that outlaw spanking and other forms of physical punishment. The Welsh government's official position is that corporal punishment is, quote, outdated and ineffective and can have negative long-term effects, end quote. Now, the opposition to the ban comes from a parent advocacy group that says this kind of a law could turn good parents into criminals. So what does the research say? Well, data from numerous studies over the last few decades indicates that physical punishment can lead to aggression, problems at school, mental health issues, and even child abuse by parents. Despite that, recent surveys show that about 65% of Americans still approve of spanking, or at least a parent's right to spank. This hour, we're going to discuss the research behind corporal punishment, the reasons behind why some parents say they still support it, and what the experts say about the most appropriate ways to discipline kids are. I'd like to welcome our guests in studio for the hour. Dr. Lynette Frohla is a pediatric emergency medicine physician at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Evan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Peggy Daravana is a licensed mental health counselor, the owner of Discoveries Counseling and Wellness Center, and a mother of two. Peggy, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Also here is Ricardo Adams. He's a recent graduate of PLTI, that's the Parent Leadership Training Institute in Rochester, and a father of two. Ricardo, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Emily Rittenberg is a parenting educator for Nurture, Family Education and Guidance, and also a mother of two. Emily, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Now, I want to stress something here, because when we reached out to professionals, parenting groups in and around Rochester, we did not find anybody in these settings who still supports corporal punishment. It was not our intention necessarily to stack a panel against it, because I know a lot of people still support a parent's right. However, we also know that the research has become pretty strong on this. And there were some listeners who said, Evan, if you put somebody on your panel who supports spanking, that's akin to someone supporting child abuse. Now, that's a strong statement. But I understand why there is a visceral reaction. Dr. Frohla, is that too strong? I mean, if we had someone who was pro-spanking here, would you say, why are you putting that person on the air? That is akin to child abuse. Are we there yet?
I think that parallel is drawn easily, because what we know from research is the long-term effects of spanking actually parallel long-term effects of physical child abuse.
Wow.
So there is quite a bit of crossover when you look at the literature, and that's literature that covers a body of multi-disciplines and over 100 years.
But in Wales, I it's interesting watching the debate from afar, because I think the number is around 50 countries that don't allow this anymore. Obviously, the United States is not one of them. But in Wales, you've got these parents groups saying, look, you've got well-meaning people and you're going to turn them into criminals? What do you say to that?
I think all parents are well-meaning people. And I think instinctively, we all want the best for our children. And one thing we were all talking about just before the show started is you have to know better to do better. And we, for generations, have accepted methods that were physical and aggressive as a means of controlling not only our children, but of controlling other people. And for that pattern to stop, we have to learn other ways. What we know from research is that physical punishment is not effective in extinguishing unwanted behaviors.
Okay, let's go around the table. And in a moment, you're going to hear about what no-hit zones are. And we'll talk more about that with Dr. Frohla. Peggy Daravan, how do you feel about the question on corporal punishment? And I think piggybacking off of what Dr. Frohla is saying, mm-hmm. the idea of getting to a point where we can and should know better.
Yeah, it would be great if we all could know better. What I think we're lacking, my blessing as being a parent, is that I had 12 years of child behavior training under my belt before I had children. So for me, the idea of spanking, you know, as an option for helping my kids out in learning was way down on the list. And actually, mine are 14 and 11 now, and we talked about it last night. And I said, guys, I've never spanked you. I don't remember ever spanking you. Do you ever remember me spanking you? And they're like, just kind of looked at me funny, like, no. But I've been fortunate to just have a litany of other kind of, you know, point A, point B, point C, point D, you know, of other things to do well before I would find spanking as being what I would consider as an option. And that's what we're missing. And that took, for me, that took, you know, working, you know, as I started out in the counseling, you know, world with, you know, behaviorally challenged kids and having great mentors. And then it was graduate school. And then it was, again, going, you know, going back into that environment and working with people directly. And I used to teach parenting before I was a parent. And that was different because it's a lot easier to connect with parents. But I really saw it as, I can teach you something because this is the stuff that, I'm not teaching parenting. I'm teaching disciplinary techniques that work. And we're missing a lot of that.
Okay. Ricardo Adams, again, a recent graduate of the Parent Leadership Training Institute and a father of two. How do you view corporal punishment, spanking, maybe in context of your own experience and how you view it as a parent?
Well, I also work at Center for Youth, and so I deal with youth, and we have this conversation all the time. But my view is absolutely no corporal punishment, but that's not my experience. That's not my story. My story is I ran away from home to get away from the spankings, and I ended up in Hillside. And that changed my whole life. So I'm where I am in spite of the spankings, not because of them. And at my school, there's over 50% of the people, staff and parents, that are in support of the spanking, but the people are not going to come out, because when you start doing that, they're going to worry about is, do you have CPS over there in the closet waiting to come after the interview? So people are not going to
sort of loudly and publicly say that they do it?
Yes.
But when you speak sort of privately or one-on-one, parents will tell you?
Yes, over 50%. Even after I do a presentation about the spanking, they say, you did a good presentation, but we don't agree with you. I'm going to save my kid. People have given written stuff this morning. I did another survey this morning in my school.
The why I support spanking?
Why they support spanking.
So what are people telling you?
One person says, you've got a stack
of comments.
Whoever spares the rod hates their children, but the ones who love their children is careful to discipline them. And then they quote Proverbs 13:24. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it from him. Proverbs 22:15. Did another one. I am not in agreement with beatings, but I am in agreement with spankings, because pain does have a purpose. I don't know what purpose that is. It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I may learn your statutes. Spank a child because you want them to learn right from wrong, not because you are upset. As a child, I received spankings when I did something that was extremely dangerous or disrespectful. Although I didn't receive many, I did understand the purpose for getting it. This is just how, and it goes on and on. When I asked to get a yes or no, all of them said they support spanking, but none of them just said it with just a yes. They had to give an explanation with it to justify how far to go with the beating. They knew how far to go. And I don't agree with that, because when I ran away from home and got sent to Hillside, it wasn't because I was getting the extreme spankings, because all of my relatives and friends were getting worse beatings than me, but my tolerance was lower, and so I just couldn't handle it. But my parents thought they knew how far to go. They went too far.
So let me look at research on this. This is according to Elizabeth Gershoff, an associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin, who studies corporal punishment. She told CNN that spanking is more common in families that have a conservative religious background. She says, quote, those parents are more likely to say that they have very strong beliefs and their interpretation of the Bible leads them to believe that spanking is a good idea and that they need to do it, end quote. So some of what you heard just this morning, Ricardo, is along those lines, right? Looking at biblical justification for corporal punishment?
Yeah, I think they're looking at just a justification for their argument, because all of them are not religiously bound like that. These are people that don't even hardly go to church. Some of them, and they're throwing that out as a defense, because we don't know any better, and people are trying to figure out, what can I do? And so we're tradition keepers. We're just going to keep up the tradition of I was spanked. So we're just going to keep doing that because I think it worked.
Yeah, go ahead, Peggy.
Well, you know, and I'm hearing even in the writings that you have there, Ricardo, the word discipline keeps coming up. Discipline. And discipline and corporal punishment are very different things. And, you know, if we look at what discipline even means, it means to teach. So, you know, as a parent and knowing that and thinking about this, you know, I like to think, what exactly am I teaching by doing what I'm doing here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're hitting someone, we're using striking or harming. Or what I think about also that goes along with spanking is also there's a shaming involved. And there's mm-hmm. definitely a disconnect in relationship between parent and child. So when we consider the purposes of teaching and disciplining and helping our child learn, the best thing we can do is be connected to them. We're then someone that can influence them. And spanking totally gets in the way of creating a forum for that.
I also want to ask Ricardo one more question before I continue around the table. And Ricardo, this comes from author Stacy Patton, and she's an assistant professor of multimedia journalism at Morgan State University, and an African-American author who is the author of the forthcoming Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. She says, today, black parents are still about twice as likely as white and Latino families to use corporal punishment on children. She writes, I've heard many black people attribute their successes or the fact that they weren't in jail to the beatings they received as children. But she says, if whooping children kept people out of prison or safe from abusive cops, there would be no mass incarceration or police brutality in the black community. If beatings were a prerequisite for success, black people would be ruling the world, end quote from her. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's a myth that is effective. I also have an author named Asada out of Chicago. She wrote a book called Beating Black Kids, and it pushes back on all of these myths. Now, before we go on to the next person up here on the panel, yeah. I just would like to say, me as a parent, I'm setting the teachers in the school district up. If beating my kids is the way that I discipline them, mm-hmm. they're in a no situation when my kids get to the school because they doubly can't put their hands on the kids to discipline them. So what? There's no way of them ever developing a relationship with me or with my kids because I've raised the bar not too high. I've just raised it to some
a place where they can't go.
Yeah, some place they can't go.
Right.
What an interesting point that I admit I'd never considered, that if you use corporal punishment and that becomes the standard for what children respond to, what happens when they go to work later in life? What happens when they go to school and people can't do that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's – and by the way, listeners, if you want to weigh in on all of this, we're just trying to understand the research and what we're learning from a lot of study on corporal punishment. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263. 3WXXI, if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Emily Rittenberg is a parenting educator for Nurture, Family Education and Guidance, and a mother of two. Where do you weigh in on all of this, Emily?
Well, you know, I understand what it's like to be a parent. I have two little kids. I've got a four-year-old and a six-year-old, little boys. And, you know, I understand the frustration that parents feel when mm-hmm. you are in the middle of a situation, your kids are super frustrating, they're not listening, they're not behaving. And oftentimes we just go back to doing the instinctual things that we know to do because that's how we were raised. So, you know, using harsh forms of punishment and not just physical punishment, but, you know, the shaming, the demeaning, mm-hmm. the treating your kids like they are a problem. That's a problem. That's a problem.
And can I ask you, and really all of our guests, I already have an email from a parent who says, you're not distinguishing between spanking and beating, and that a lot of parents say spanking is not beating. That's not the same thing, and you're doing a disservice to the conversation by conflating everything. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, I think that when you're saying spanking, I mean, just think about it from the child's perspective, whether you're spanking or beating. The child is in a position of no power. The person who is in the power is hurting them. So I'm not sure there is much of a distinction from my point of view.
Okay, Ricardo?
No, I that's an argument. This just leads to another argument. And anybody who is pro spanking is gonna use that as a defense. But the child, you ask the child, was it a spanking or a beating? And I bet you 90% of the time they're gonna say it was a beating.
Yeah.
Cause that's how they feel. We don't realize what we're putting out there. And like I said,
totally.
People thought that maybe I should have been able to handle the spankings that I got. But my tolerance wasn't the same as everyone's.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When we look at the literature,
Dr. Frohlich, go ahead.
When we look at the literature, it's all put in the same category. And physical punishment is the same as corporal punishment. And it's considered everything from slapping a hand to spanking, to beatings, to burn injuries, spank, smack, slap, pop, beat, paddle, punch, whip, hit, all of that. It's all physical punishment. And it's important to realize that it's all in that same category because the effects on the behaviors and on the individuals are the same.
Okay, Peggy?
It's interesting. You know, I talked to my kids about if I ever spanked them yesterday, but I also brought it up with a 14-year-old client. Just because we were chatting before we had our session. And I said, hey, I'm going to go in and talk about spanking tomorrow. Were you ever spanked? And she looks at me. She goes, yes, once. Very clearly. And she's like, yeah, I was about to, like, run by some cars. And I said, okay. And we kind of got into what we were doing. But then her mom came into the room later and the child looked at her mom and said, you spanked me once, right? And the mom goes, yes, I did that once. And she just looked horrified. That one experience, mm-hmm. you know, in a kind of an emergency type situation, it's just stuck out so blaringly for these two people compared to all the other disciplining that they've done their entire life. Mm-hmm. So I think that one spanking, spankings really do stand out. I can think of, you know, vivid times when I witnessed it in my own family, or I can remember the times. And I don't remember all the other times where I got yelled at or disciplined or had to, you know, didn't get to go to my friend's house. Those don't stand out, but spankings do.
And we know that anytime there's an intense emotional experience, our memory is augmented mm-hmm. and definitely affected. I should say also that when we look at the detrimental effects of physical punishment, you do see a relationship between severity and frequency. Mm-hmm. So the mm-hmm. more frequently physical punishment is used in a household, the more detrimental it can be and the more severe the incidents, which I think intuitively makes sense to all of us. Those who argue in favor of spankings justify it, I think, in part because they do see effectiveness. And I think it's fair to say that there is an effective interruption of an unwanted behavior. Yep. And you're sure. inducing shock. Mm-hmm. You're stopping the behavior. But what we also know is that over time, if that's repeated, that effect becomes the method becomes less effective and that shock and interruption is no longer the case, which leads either to increased intensity or just a fail, if not already, to the other problems, like a failure of the parent-child relationship and that lack of connection.
Mm-hmm. And if I can just speak to some of the research that kind of bears out what Dr. Frohlich is saying about increasing intensity, this is from Scientific American, an article that takes a look at that research. Because I think everyone can agree that there's a difference between a smack on the bottom and a beating that leaves blood or scars. But the question is there a difference in the impact on the child's behavior and long-term effects? And is it actually likely? Some people are saying, I spanked my child. I would never beat the child to a point of bleeding or those kinds of things. Scientific American says, research says parents shouldn't spank their kids because it does predict negative behavior changes. And there are no studies, according to Scientific American, showing that kids improve because of it. And there is a worrying body of research that says some parents who spank may end up using harsher physical methods later, mm-hmm. probably mm-hmm. because of what Dr. Frohlich is saying, that initially that first spanking might be a jolt, a shock in the change of behavior. But the research says as kids start resisting it or just saying, well, I guess I'm going to get spanked.
Get used to it.
Yeah, I'm used to it. Now the parent wants to go a little further.
And I think we have to think about what that desensitization means for the child and their tendency toward aggressive behaviors and violence in the community. We know also that individuals who are physically disciplined are more likely to engage in violent behaviors, to be involved in violent relationships within their own families, to abuse their children, or to be in situations of either perpetrating or being the victim of intimate partner violence. And perhaps some of that is because that repetitive exposure and desensitization. I think we can all agree that violence in the community is something that needs to be addressed from many levels.
All right. So I want to get to the phone calls in a second. Let me read a quick email and we'll get to some of your phone calls. And again, in a moment, we're going to tell you about no hit zones. So we're talking about corporal punishment and what the research says and trends here. So this comes from Jillian in Geneseo. She says she's 70 years old. She says, I was spanked on a bare bottom with a leather strap into my teens. It scarred me for life, and it broke my spirit. She says, otherwise, my parents were loving parents, and it's so sad for me to have such mixed feelings about them. Mm-hmm. It's primarily driven by my domineering mother, because my father was gentle and didn't approve, but was made to do it. And she goes on to say, it has amazed me that my daughter got better obedience from her own children just by counting to five, never raising a hand to her children. So again, I always want to be careful when we talk about anecdote versus study, because someone's going to call the program and say, I was spanked and I turned out fine. And that's not a good enough reason to say spanking is okay. I'm also not saying you have bad parents or they're bad people, but I'm saying that the research is tricky when you start bringing anecdotes in. But I think there are times where anecdotes really bolster what the research is telling us. And Jillian's email is an example, I think. Is that fair, Dr. Frohlo?
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
All right, so let's get to your phone calls. And this is, boy, we've got a lot of folks who want to weigh in now. I'm going to go to Nick and Chile first. Go ahead, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks, Evan. I wanted to speak for myself as a 28-year-old guy who grew up in Rochester.
Hold on, Nick. I'm losing you. Make sure you're right on the receiver there. Go ahead.
Whoops. I'm sorry. I wanted to speak for myself as a 28-year-old guy who grew up in Rochester and went to Catholic schools, including Aquinas High School. Amongst my friend groups, none of us, I don't think, would say that we were ever spanked. And I think that comes from my observation that it's a generational thing that's faded out, because our parents are more likely to talk to us. And because we aren't fearing a punishment that's physical, we're more likely to talk to our parents later on about an issue that we're having and not be afraid of getting physically punished. Also, as a second comment, for what it's worth, I wanted to point out an episode of The Sopranos in season one. Tony talks to his psychiatrist about how his father had a quote-unquote leather strap that was his favorite child development tool. For what that's worth, the show goes on with that, but I think it comes with a cultural thing, a generational thing, and hopefully it's fading out.
Nick, thanks. Are you saying, though, that you really think that, you know, sort of the younger cohort of parents out there right now are just different than previous generations?
I think they're more willing to look at research and wonder before acting what's right, what's effective, and what's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, just on the research that we've been able to pull, and again, citing Elizabeth Gershoff, associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin, who studies corporal punishment, she finds that younger parents are more likely to spank, but spanking is declining overall across all demographics and income levels. So it supports a little of what Nick's saying, but it does remind us that the younger the parent, the more likely there is to be spanking. Nick, thank you for the phone call. Let me get some reaction from some panelists there. I mean, Ricardo, you talk to parents all the time as a graduate of PLTI, Center for Youth. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't see it. A lot of young people say that what I say is just a theory. It doesn't help them in their house controlling their kids. And so they do what they need to do. That's what they say they need to do. And they keep always reflecting back to they are where they are because of the spankings that they got, instead of in spite of the spankings that they got. And I tell them it don't work. And they tell me it did work. And they feel strongly about it. Some of them don't call it spanking. They call it popping. I just pop my son when he needs it. Like that lessens the blow. I don't see a big drastic change in the younger parents. I really don't. I don't. Mm-hmm. I know people have studies to say it's diminishing, but I just don't see it in real time at my school.
And the latest polling does still indicate almost 2/3 of Americans support parents' right to spank, despite the research. So that goes more along the line with what Ricardo was saying. Peggy, are you a believer, though, that with more education, that we will see this change? That if we go ahead a generation or two, it will be drastically different?
I would hope so. I do think that we're trying more and more to educate. I know that's exactly, mm-hmm. you know, what you're about.
Yeah, Emily.
Emily. I thought it was Emily. Thank you. That's exactly what Emily's doing, which I think is exciting. I would love to see, you know, parent education or child discipline education or something in high schools. You know, they drag a baby around or they pretend it's an egg to see what it's like to have to take care of. But that doesn't teach a whole lot of anything. Most of us are going to go and interact with children at some point. It just gets in. I really hope that we do more and more, and that this program and what, you know, what countries around the world are starting to talk about, you know, at least we're getting the conversation going. It's really exciting.
Emily, how do you feel about that?
You know, I think it's really interesting that so many people are so attached to their right to hit their child. Yeah, there's something in there that needs to really get explored. Like, why do they hang on to that? There's so many other ways to connect with your child and teach them the lesson that you want them to learn that don't leave emotional scarring. And that's not a risk factor, excuse me, for aggression or antisocial behavior. There's so many right ways to get them to comply.
Our listener, Dan, points us to a quote from the author Ta-Nehisi Coates, who in his book Between the World and We writes the following. He says, quote, "If I put my hands on my son, I would consider it to be my ultimate failure as a parent. If all I have over him are my hands, I have nothing," end quote. That's Ta-Nehisi Coates, an author talking about parenthood and how he feels about the issue. I want to get back to some of your phone calls because there's a lot of people wanting to weigh in. Mm-hmm. Peter in Rochester. Go ahead, Peter.
Okay, thanks, Evan. I was a wild child. My grandmother, she washed my mouth out with lava soap. I knew where the line was. I liked to throw snowballs at cars. My friend's father talked to my grandmother. She said, if he hits cars with snowballs, you can spank him. I went to prison, and I talked to dudes, black dudes, who got hit by three sets of relatives before the dad came home. They knew the line, and they knew that they made that choice because they had people trying to tell them the difference between right and wrong. You have guys, men, boys, who are wild and going to do stuff. They're going to be hell raisers, and you have to speak the language of what's being spoken at the time. There's a big difference between abuse and discipline when somebody is intent on doing what they're going to do because they like vandalizing, because they like blowing up frogs that they made, because they like setting fire.
Okay, so Peter, can I ask you a quick follow-up then, Peter? Because I understand what you're saying is you want to recognize which kind of kids, what kind of people might be, in your words, hellraisers, and intervene in some way. But that sort of presumes
that... The moment, Evan, everything is dictated by the context of the moment. If the person can't be reached verbally, if they can't be reached verbally and respect the person and give the appropriate response of contrition and compassion to that person, then... I will tell you that it'll be their peers. Somebody will come out and justice will be served, because you don't get to talk to people and you don't get to act to people in certain ways. Well, sooner or later, it's going to come back to you.
But so Peter,
you might as well learn how to act before you end up going to prison.
Okay, so I just want to ask you a question. I want to follow up because I understand sort of the spirit of what you're saying. But in my mind, I'm thinking of an 18-year-old, in your words, a hellraiser, someone who likes to vandalize, likes to cause trouble, and what might work. But that 18-year-old didn't come out of the womb at 18 years old raising hell. And what we're talking about are...
And it wasn't because he got slapped either. That was not the reason. Some people like doing what they like doing.
Okay.
Every case is different.
But it is not necessarily natural for children to just become adults who like to vandalize or steal or hurt others. Mm-hmm. That's part of what happens in their upbringing, right? So isn't this a conversation that goes well back before they become quote-unquote hellraisers and asks what kind of approach to a young developing person, a 3-year-old, mm-hmm. a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, will eventually lead into the kind of person who might want to vandalize? Isn't that what this is about?
It certainly is, because if you can't raise them, don't make them.
You should have a license
to breathe.
I wish that the only kids that got spanked were the kids that were vandalizing and stuff like that. That is definitely not the case for most kids. I can recall clearly my last time that I got spanked, when I got finally sent to Hillside. The court said, you got to go. It's too much. I got sent to the store for a pack of cigarettes, and I was told that I could go to the playground after that. I was so happy when I came out the store. I was throwing the pack of cigarettes up in the air, just being happy, and it got stuck on the ledge of the second floor there, and I couldn't get it. Mm. Oh, my God, what a crime I had committed. I got spanked, and then that was it. I left home. I never stayed home again. But that's not anything to be putting anybody in a category, a group of kids. Most kids don't do anything that deserves a spanking. I really don't know personally what deserves a spanking. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing that even should be considered. There should be all kind of options of just having a conversation with a person, with a child. Or even just letting them get away with some stuff every now and then. It's a child.
Dr. Lynette Frohla, pediatric emergency medicine physician at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. What do you make of Peter's phone call there's a difference between discipline and abuse, and sometimes corporal punishment is simply appropriate discipline?
Well, what really stood out to me was that he was saying I'm not going to be able to recall his exact words, but it might be necessary for the child who's not responding with verbal redirection, who isn't coming up with an appropriate compassion for the other person involved in a conflict, who isn't contrite and regretful. But what I wanted to challenge him with is, well, how do you teach that child to have that compassion, mm-hmm. to understand the consequences of the behaviors that they choose? And if you're using violence to try to teach that lesson, you're sending a great deal of mixed messaging.
Peter, I know there are people who you view as hellraisers. I don't believe, and the research supports, that no one is irredeemable. And the research does not support corporal punishment as a way to change that. It just doesn't. There's a lot of research. That's why, I mean, we're an evidence-based show. The American Academy of Pediatrics is out with this. I'm going to quote the American Academy of Pediatrics now. Disciplining your child is not easy, but it is a vital part of good parenting. The AAP recommends a 3-step approach toward effective child discipline. First, establish a positive, supporting, and loving relationship with your child. Without this foundation, your child has no reason other than fear to demonstrate good behavior. Second, use positive reinforcement to increase the behavior you want from the child. And third, if you feel discipline is necessary, the AAP recommends that you do not spank or use other physical punishments. That only teaches aggressive behavior, and it becomes ineffective if used often. Instead, use appropriate timeouts for young children. Discipline older children by temporarily removing favorite privileges, such as sports activities or playing with friends. That is from the AAP, and that is based on a lot of research. So that's why we're here today. We're talking about what the research says. We're not at all trying to be sort of parent-shaming or judging. We're just trying to have a conversation about the research, mm-hmm. because nobody as a parent likes to feel, you know, like you've done something terrible or wrong, and we all make mistakes. Oh, my gosh. I make mistakes every day, but that's what we're talking about. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back, get more of your phone calls. Dr. Frohla is going to tell us about no-hit zones, and we'll continue the conversation next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, what's going on with your taxes? We've heard a lot about SALT, state and local taxes, and how the new federal tax bill could save or cost you. We're going to try to clear all of that up. In our second hour, a number of local businesses are trying to help underprivileged and underrepresented groups find work. We'll talk about what they're doing and whom they're hiring. It's Wednesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's talk just a little bit about what a no-hit zone is, a national program that's being introduced, as I understand it, at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Frola, tell us about that.
Yeah, we have a no-hit zone now established in the pediatric emergency department, and we are working on expanding it to the children's hospital. The no-hit zone is a program that started at Rainbow Babies in Ohio. And it started because a group of nurses and nurse practitioners came together and said, what can we do about this? What can we do differently? Because on the hospital floors, they were witnessing parents using physical discipline with their children who were hospitalized. And the decision was to just say, it's not allowed here. And all of the research that we've been talking about this hour backs that up. And there certainly is a fair amount of pushback. But an analogy would be, you know, in the hospital, we don't permit smoking. It's legal to smoke. You're free to smoke. That's not against the law. But we know that it's detrimental to health and harmful to people. So we don't permit it here. This is a medical institution, and we want to promote health and safety. So we decided that we wanted to establish a no-hit zone in the children's hospital because we care about children's health, children's safety, and it's an opportunity to educate the community about physical punishment and, very importantly, an opportunity to support parents. And you mentioned, I think just a moment ago, we might have been on break, that we don't want to judge and condemn parents. And, you know, I'm a parent, too. It's the hardest job in the world. And there are certainly moments that make me want to lose my mind. But we need help and we need resources and we need each other. And so the no-hit zone is much about providing those resources and providing help and information.
Well, I appreciate that, and I want to get an email and then a phone call from Gary because we've got some listeners talking about what happens in schools. So let me go ahead and read this email first from Mary, who says, as a former high school teacher and having stood between angry students who are smacking each other, I believe they are reaching to what they have seen modeled in their home as an okay behavior for being frustrated angry. Mm-hmm. Kids love their parents, and this whole mentality, I got hit, I'm okay, gets confused with being loyal to their parents and loving of them. Mm-hmm. She says 19 states still have corporal punishment in schools. Some districts within those individual states have banned it. But she says the parish/district in Louisiana, where the teacher was physically manhandled while being arrested this month, was in a district that still uses corporal punishment. And it's not surprising, Mary says, that this was a tactic used on that teacher. So please don't hit the kids and don't hit each other. Thank you for addressing this issue. That's from Mary. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the email, Mary. Gary in Rochester wants to weigh in as well. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi. Thanks, Evan, for my call. I grew up in New Jersey, and when I was a boy, I misbehaved a lot. I remember the gym teacher holding me up by my shirt collar and my feet off the ground, slapping me against the wall. And then 20 years later, I worked beside the same man as a substitute teacher and watched him discipline a little boy doing the same stuff that I used to do. And every minute he would tell his kid, Johnny, I like you. I don't like what you just did. Johnny, you're a good boy. That's a bad thing. Johnny, I like you. I don't like what you just did. And that's the way I raised my kids. And I didn't have to spank them, but because when I did, I struck out almost without thinking. If one of my kids said something, I'd slap them because that's what I was slapped when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But I tried not to slap or spank the kids at all. And attack the behavior, not the person. And that's what I learned from that. You know, you're a good person. That's a bad thing you're doing.
Gary, thank you. What a frankly important distinction to make there, that it's the behavior that you want to kind of go at and knock down, but not the physical person. And distinguishing between person and behavior is a great one to remember. Gary, I appreciate that. And I want to ask our panel, I want to take Gary's call, Mary's email, and a look at some of the research and get some response from panelists on schools, because it was less than a year ago that NPR did a story about corporal punishment still with deep roots in American schools in many states. And there's two things that stand out to me. There are 15 states that expressly permit in the school corporal punishment. And there are many districts in those states most of them are southern states where students can choose paddling over suspension. So that's one thing that still happens.
Wow.
And then think about when we talk about implicit bias and racism. Mm. Black students are 5 times more likely to be hit than white students for committing the same offenses. That's according to Stacy Patton, assistant professor of multimedia journalism at Morgan State University, and again, the author of the forthcoming book, Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. So when you allow paddling and corporal punishment in schools, number one, the research doesn't support that it does any good, and number two, students of color get unfairly targeted. That's what the research is telling us. Dr. Frohlich, how do we feel about schools? I mean, it doesn't happen in New York State. It's prohibited in New York State.
Right.
But, I mean, can you sort of envision, if you were working in a state that allowed it, do there need to be more conversations with the medical community, about the research community?
I've spoken with colleagues in such states who actually are implementing no-hit zones there as well. And it's a tougher battle to fight to defend that no-hit zone when it's so widely accepted as a means of quote-unquote discipline. But I think, you know, what we're doing here today and what so many of us have been trying to do in our own lives and in our work is we need to know better. And unfortunately, our legal systems, our public institutions often lag behind our information. And I think that's where we are now. I think there's hope. We're catching up. We've mentioned earlier, and it's true, there is slowly decreasing support for physical punishment. And we need to keep moving in that direction and hopefully move faster.
Okay, Peggy?
I think about teachers, parents, all of us. We're all working hard to help bring up hopefully good kids, good people, and it's not an easy task. And with that comes a lot of expectation of ourselves. When Gary mentioned, he maybe slapped his kid real fast because we want to do well, and it's frustrating and it's difficult and we don't always know what to do. And my worry when it comes to physical discipline, or if we want to call it that even, is that we're bringing in our emotions when we're doing that, and that makes it even scarier because, a teacher who is trying to maintain control of an entire classroom, a parent who is terrified that their child just isn't getting it. We're much more emotional. We're angry. We're hurt. We're upset. And our emotion comes out in our hands or in what we're doing. And that's another really good reason to try something different. I try very hard there. I have those moments, and I force myself to walk away from the situation. And I want to encourage people to do that. We talk about that with when your child's very young and doesn't stop crying. Obviously if there's a safety issue, but, you know, make sure your child is safe and then walk away so that your emotions can settle down for a bit and you can make a good choice about how you're going to discipline.
Ricardo.
Well, when you start mixing this issue with the education system, I can tell you from my experience, it's absolutely unacceptable to think that there's going to be some discipline going on in the school. Parents is not having
it. You mean physical discipline?
Physical discipline.
Yeah.
Spanking. You better not even be looking at their kids too tough. It might be acceptable a little bit for them. Even the ones that are pro-spanking are not pro it happening in the school. And this is the dilemma. When you do that in the form of discipline is spanking, the teacher has a no-win situation. You're taking any tool that the teacher might have had to be able to use to correct your child. You've taken it from them because they cannot go there. And we're never going back to that. I can tell you that. Not in Rochester City School District. We're never going back to that. And so what you're doing is, if you don't spank your child, what you're doing is helping the teacher. You're helping the teacher be able to use some other tools to try to discipline the child.
What you're hearing is Ricardo bang his hands on the table because he's feeling
it. I'm sorry.
And that's, we're all feeling what you're saying, Ricardo.
Yes.
You're making some very powerful points. Dr. Frohlich?
I want to just back up what Ricardo's saying because there's a lot of research to support it. First of all, In 2004, the General Social Survey went out and found that 71% of adults agree or strongly agree with the statement that children sometimes need a good hard spanking. Mm-hmm. That's in contrast to the 1960s, same survey, 94% of adults agreed. But 1 year after that 71%, in 2005, only 25% of people agree that teachers should be permitted to spank. So mm-hmm. That's an interesting discrepancy. Mm-hmm. And what we also know from research is that part of the problem with physical punishment is that once you've used that tactic, other alternative methods that we know to be effective are more difficult to implement mm-hmm. with effect. Mm-hmm. And what we know is that a child's behavior is then motivated by avoiding pain and fear, and therefore the spanker, if you will, instead of being motivated by doing the right thing, having a positive outcome of their actions, and more the sort of intrinsic good citizen mm-hmm. type of things that we want to teach our children. Mm-hmm. And when we use physical discipline, we can actually override the message that we're trying to send, because that powerful surge of pain and fear mm-hmm. drowns out the lesson.
Mm-hmm. All right, Emily Rittenberg.
Especially when it's done repeatedly.
You know, The powerful urge of pain and fear that you were just mentioning, that is just a child's amygdala getting totally lit up, that fight, flight, or freeze response. Yeah. So when we are lit up in that way and our brains are lit up in that way, either as parents or as kids, mm-hmm. it's hard to activate those higher levels of thinking. Your empathy, your just all those higher levels of thinking, your ability to problem solve, your ability to think clearly. So it's really, really important that, you know, when kids are misbehaving, you're looking at their misbehavior as a form of communication to you.
Yeah,
and thinking about what you can do with that behavior, what's underneath that behavior, what is the ultimate message that kid is giving you.
All right, Steve in Brighton has been waiting. Go ahead, Steve.
You know, I just have to say, as an older person, that we feared our teachers, and they deserved that fear. I once had an eighth grade teacher grab a young man while we were in the library. I went all the way through school in a class of 38 students. She grabbed him, took me outside the hall, grabbed him by his shoulders, and banged his head into the concrete wall until he either passed out or was addled. When the period was over, we all 38 of us, walked around or stepped over his body in the floor and went back to our classroom, and she never got in trouble. And she wouldn't have got in trouble even if other people had seen it, because our parents always supported the teacher. Mm-hmm. And so we just can't allow it to go back to that sort of thing anymore. And this is just one of many stories I could relate. Okay. Thank you all.
And Steve, just a quick question for you then.
Yes.
When you say the parents supported the teachers, the parents supported the teacher's right to be physical, right?
Yes, they did. The male teachers paddled us with long wooden paddles to the point of blisters. Mm. And they paddled the girls, too. It wasn't just a boy thing. All right.
So I wonder, Steve, if you feel, if you agree with what Ricardo has been telling us all hour long, that when schools are no longer doing that, and I think the research indicates they shouldn't, but when parents are doing that at home, it makes it even harder. That's a way of not supporting the teachers who want to discipline in appropriate ways.
No, I agree with that. I agree. Yeah. We just can't do it. And I understand the problem that if a child receives corporal punishment at home, he may think the school punishment is easy. But, I mean, I don't know how we get around this. We have to teach parents. Oh, my goodness. You see parents on the street screaming and yelling and calling their children four-letter words. You just know they're going to pass that on. It's just – and this is no different from that.
Steve, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to call. And I know those are not pleasant stories and memories to share.
No, they're not. Yeah. Thank you.
That's Stephen Brighton. And again, they still paddle in North Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, and Texas. Tens of thousands of students are paddled in those states every year. in 2018. Getting ready to close the program, Diane writes the following. It says, Evan, you state that you're not trying to shame parenting choices, but all of the studies you share say that spanking isn't effective, doesn't work, teaches the wrong thing. Yet you don't want to offend people who still choose to do this to the most vulnerable in society? I say, go ahead and shame. I spanked and I am ashamed. Mm. That's from Diane. A final thought from Dr. Frola. I understand the point she's making. And she's saying, as someone who spanked, she's ashamed. I don't want shame.
Right.
We just want
shame
education,
about
understanding, knowledge, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Knowledge, and we need alternative mm-hmm. methods. You know, I think most, if not all parents want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. They love their children. They mm-hmm. want their children to be good people. And we all, as parents, get frustrated and feel ineffective. And often, I think, misunderstand a child's capacity to change their behaviors. We could all use more patience. We could all use more support. Mm-hmm. And we need different strategies.
Dr. Lynette Frola is a pediatric emergency medicine physician at UR Medicine's Golisano Children's Hospital. Thanks for your expertise and thanks for being here this hour.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Emily Rittenberg, parenting educator for Nurture, Family Education and Guidance, and a mother of two. All parents here on this panel today, and it can be tough, but thank you, Emily. Thanks for your expertise and knowledge as well.
Me.
Ricardo Adams, a recent graduate of the Parent Leadership Training Institute, works at the Center for Youth, father of two, and a passionate guy. Thank you for your thoughts and your passion this hour. I appreciate it, Ricardo.
Thank you.
And Peggy Derivan, licensed mental health counselor, owner of Discoveries Counseling and Wellness Center, also a mom of two. Thank you, Peggy. Great having you this hour.
Thanks so much.
Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we're back with you Wednesday on member-supported public radio.